Summer, the best time of year, usually doesn't come with a great deal. Soaring temperatures come with soaring prices. But what if there's another way? With IKEA, your summer plans can last longer than 2 weeks of vacation and be more affordable. Here, everyone can have lounge chair access, no reservations needed. From affordable outdoor furniture to stylish accessories, we have all the essentials you need to soak up summer in style, no matter the size of your space. Start planning a better summer with IKEA. It's your outdoor dreams inside your budget.
Best Western made booking our family beach vacation a breeze, and it felt a little like... Time to go. Okay, kids, back in the room.
You gotta come on, guys. This has to be like...
Good night. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of The Show About Science. This is your host, Nate. So, hidden in the Lincoln Park Zoo in Chicago is a lab. And in that lab is a freezer filled with poop.
All right, you want to see the poop lab?
Yes!
Where the magic happens?
Yes!
All right.
What can we learn from studying all this animal poop? Well, let's find out.
Now let me show you the freezer, because the freezer is one of the coolest things we have, okay? So in this freezer alone, we have samples from black rhinos, pygmy hippos, red river hogs, octopus,
snow leopard.
Mm-hmm, lots of snow leopard poop.
Yeah. Japanese solorus.
Mm-hmm, pygmy solorus, yep. Diana monkey, pied tamarin, and polar bear. Pretty cool, huh? I think we've studied over 120 species in our lab.
I'm not going to doubt that.
This is my guest today, Rachel.
Dr. Rachel Santemeyer, and I work here at the Lincoln Park Zoo, and I was hired to start the endocrinology program, which is just the study of hormones, and these are hormones that have to do with reproduction and stress.
So I've heard that you have a nickname, which is...
They call me Dr. Poop.
And why do people refer to you as Dr. Poop?
Well, because I don't want to disturb the animals when I study them. And so I have the animal care staff pick up samples for me, fecal samples, poop, because we can actually get hormones from feces. And so the animals don't even know that I'm studying what goes on inside their body or how they react to certain things. So it's kind of a secret job. It's a detective, really. Poop detective.
So, how did you get this job as the poop person?
As Dr. Poop at the zoo?
Yes.
Well, you know, I loved animals growing up. I had horses and dogs and cats, and I thought, you know, I should become a veterinarian. And I took a lot of school, I had interviews, and I actually didn't get into vet school. And so I sort of panicked. Until the scientist from the National Zoo, the Smithsonian, said that he was an animal scientist and he learned about cows and horses like I did, but he was applying everything he learned to endangered species like cheetahs and clouded leopards. And so once I found out all the skills I learned at school I could be applying to endangered species conservation, I found jobs in zoos as quickly as possible.
And I heard... Did you predict that the female rhino Kapuki, I think it was going to give birth?
I did, yes. We were the first ones to know that she was pregnant. We were super excited by that.
So, what is your favorite animal to collect fecal matter from?
Well, I have collected some samples that are pretty stinky. I have to tell you, I had people leave the fecal lab because I was processing samples from a fishing cat. So I don't know if you have ever had a cat or smelled cat poo, but cat poo is pretty stinky. I mean, they're carnivores, right? They're true carnivores. And so fishing cats...
It is stinky when they do not bury it.
Yeah, exactly.
And when they bury it, I'm fine with picking it up. Like, well, not with my hands, but the scoop, and then putting it in the garbage.
So you have cats at home? You scoop litter boxes?
I don't. Oh. I just scoop it for friends.
Oh, you are, yes, you are that excited about poop. You're like, yes. I can see you're going to become the next future Dr. Poop, right?
Yeah.
So that was the fishing cat. They're a small cat from Southeast Asia. They dive into the water and they eat fish and mollusks. So you know how stinky cat poop is anyway. Just imagine if they ate fish only.
I was at the Shedd Aquarium earlier today, and I smelled fish smells, so combine that with cat poop.
Yeah, people would leave. They would leave even though they knew it was the fecal lab, and they were prepared to deal with feces, yeah. But the other one I find pretty interesting is giant panda poop. Smells kind of like tea because of the bamboo that they eat. It's really kind of unusual. Doesn't smell as bad.
I bet it's just still gross that... You're like, oh, that must be tea. What have I done?
Yeah, no, it definitely does not look like tea. It smells better, though, than a fishing cat.
I bet.
But I think here, the stinkiest poo that we have to deal with is the polar bear. Yeah, that's another stinky one. People, so, you know, there's a door between our office and the labs. And so people kind of have to close that door because it just kind of creeps into the building. And, you know, these folks aren't really here to smell polar bear poo, so.
So, what does it smell like? I'm curious now.
It smells also fishy, you know, and just...
I bet.
Carnivore.
Whoa, yeah, so much fish.
Yeah. And we work with some species like the black rhinos, and they're solitary animals, so they actually communicate with feces. They have chemicals, maybe pheromones in their feces, and it tells others what's going on inside their body. And that's how they communicate. So their feces are pretty stinky, too.
Okay. Processing all the poop. All right, got it. So how do you know what they've been eating?
Oh, yeah. Well, sometimes you can actually see it if they're eating seeds. So one of the challenges of working at the zoo and being Dr. Poop is when the animals live together, right? Like, how do I know that fecal matter came from that individual? We've actually had to feed them certain things with seeds, like bird seed, that, like our wild dogs, our African painted dogs, you feed them bird seed in their food and they poop out the bird seed. So we feed just a special treat to one individual to get them to eat that one, and then they poop out the bird seed, so we know that sample came from them. And then another trick is we give them food coloring. So we give them a treat with blue food coloring and their poop turns green. So we can identify it that way. So we find, like, that's a way to mark feces because it shows up in their feces. But we can also use other chemicals, they call them stable isotopes, like nitrogen and carbon, to see what kind of quality of food they're eating, too. So those are other things you can learn from feces and what they're eating besides just seeing it in the feces.
So what tools do you use to analyze the stuff that they have digested?
Yeah, so I use the feces to study these chemicals called hormones. And I can tell, like, when the rhino got pregnant, we were the first ones to know that she was pregnant because of her hormones. And so we'll weigh out the feces, just like a little scoop, you know, like the Slurpee scoops that you get. We have some scientific ones, of course. And we scoop and we'll weigh out the feces. And then we add chemicals to it, like alcohol. And we'll mix it. So we have these big shakers that shake the test tubes full of feces. And you can come to the lab and see it.
So basically I'm imagining you with a test tube full of poop happily shaking it.
Yeah, we've tried that for our field stuff. So if we're going to do anything in Africa and we don't have a lot of electricity, you can definitely put it into a test tube, cap it, and shake it. Or we have what I call a special test tube blender. It's called a homogenizer. It has a technical term. But it literally blends it in one sample at a time in a test tube. And then sometimes we will dry it. We'll freeze dry it. I don't know if you ever had, like, bananas or anything freeze dried fruit. Well, we have one of those things just for feces, not for you to do banana chips. But we will freeze dry it, and then we use a rubber mallet to crush it into a fine powder. So we use some of these technical things. But we also have pipetters that we can use to quantify or measure the amount of hormones in the samples.
So, like, why do you need the poop? Why can't you analyze something else?
Ah, that's a great question. So if the doctor was going to look at our hormone levels, they would probably take blood from us, right? And I don't know about you, but taking blood can be stressful. For somebody like me, I kind of just faint. So I'm like, you just have to lay me down, right? Before you even try to take my blood. But you know, with our animals, even though they're well-trained, we can't always get blood samples from them. So we use feces.
So what you're saying is doctors should just keep us in a secluded room until we go poop. And then they can use that.
They could, but it requires more processing. So with humans, they probably want to do something that's quicker, which is blood, which they have already validated, meaning they already know what normal levels are. We don't necessarily know that for our animals. So sometimes we have to study an individual kind of over the time, like during maybe a stressful time. So before we start construction, if we think that might impact the animals, during construction and after, really to see how their levels change. So we also, besides feces, we can use feathers and hair and toenails to look at hormone levels. So it's cool.
Oh, yeah, but not all the animals here have any of those.
That's true. And so what we did for amphibians, which they are sort of one of my nemesis because they're elusive poopers or they don't poop very often. And so how can I study their hormones if I can't get blood from them? So I actually will use a special scientific Q-tip and swab their backs, their skins, to actually get hormones from them. So we can figure out if a frog is stressed simply by doing a swab.
How do you know if the construction's bothering the animals? And what do you do if it is?
Yeah, so one of the things is the zoo learns more about our animals. Mm-hmm. We have to change, too, to meet their needs, right? We have to change our buildings and make better habitats for them. Mm. And so we can't always move our animals away. So when we are doing construction on our Regenstein African journey, our giraffes had to stay here. And so we actually collected samples from them before the construction started to get what their normal levels of stress are. You know what stress is?
Yeah, it's like anxiety.
Yeah, but it's not always a bad thing, right?
Right.
Like if you're a little stressed about a test, sometimes that can give you the edge to get over it, right? Or for an animal, if they didn't know something was stressful, they may not try to escape a predator. So stress is not a bad thing unless it happens over a long period of time. For us, it might be someone being bullied and they're afraid to go to school every day. So we don't want our animals to be like that. So we actually study their stress levels. And we usually do it before things happen or change. And during, so if the construction, we want to collect before the construction so we can figure out what their normal levels of stress are. Because everybody has their own levels of stress, right? And
yeah.
So, you know, it's just their personality. And so then we'll study during the construction and then after, see how things have changed.
I see.
And so if we think there's problems, usually they're going to notice the behavior changes. And what we do is we give them lots of enrichment. So lots of things to do. So whether it's food or games to play, working with our staff, we do all these things to keep them happy. And so I'm just one of the pieces that tells them that things are not going well for the animal. So my job is never boring because we're learning all the time, like learning about octopuses. Who knew I would learn about octopuses? I mean, it is really cool. It is neat. And anybody can be a Dr. Poop. That's what I think is really cool. You know, you got to do school and stuff. But, you know, if you love nature and you want to conserve it and help manage it better, you know, you can be a Dr. Poop.
Thank you for being on the show.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome.
There you have it, folks. The show about science is complete. Music on this episode was composed by Jeff Dan and Teresa Brooks. Okay, Dad, you can shut the recording off.
Best Western made booking our family beach vacation a breeze, and it felt a little like... Time to go. Oh. Okay, kids, back in the room.
You gotta come on. This has to be
good night. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western.
Hi, my name's Zach. I'm 12 years old, and I host We the Children, the podcast where kids talk climate change. Like a lot of kids my age, when I think about the future, I can't help but wonder what kind of world will be waiting for us. Will polar bears still roam the Arctic? Will we still be able to see colorful coral reefs or build snowmen in the winter? I'd like to think so. That's why I'm trying to learn as much as I can about climate change science, stories, and solutions from some of the world's leading experts, and share what I learned with all of you. Together, we can decide what type of future we want for our planet. Subscribe to We the Children on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. And visit us at WeTheChildrenPodcast.com. Remember, we, the children, have the power to make a difference.